So this is part of a little series on working in meditation. So Pranimati's done two parts of that already, and then there'll be the final part next week. Could I just check if anyone hasn't been to any of those? Okay, so there's quite a few people actually. Okay. So I might try and recap a little bit. But this evening I'm going to be talking about absorption in meditation, samadhi and dhyana. So you may or may not have come across these words, and I will explain them. So samadhi, so this word is it's quite often translated as concentration. You may have heard it translated as concentration. But it's a bit of a narrow translation, really. It's talking about states in meditation where there's a real kind of settling down in body and mind, and a stability and a sort of coming together, a unification of our different energies, body and mind, and a kind of, a wholeness, coming together of different parts of ourselves and into states of well-being and pleasure. Yeah, so very much characterized by well-being and pleasure. This word dhyana is a Sanskrit word. The Pali equivalent that you might have come across is jhana, with a J, J-H. And these are specific states of samadhi, specific states of absorption that the Buddha talks about quite a lot, actually. If you look in the Pali canon, the first Buddhist text, you will find the Buddha referring to these states quite a lot. And there's eight dhyanas. I've just mentioned, sort of detailing four here. So there's four dhyanas, and then there's four further dhyanas that are called the formless dhyanas. So, there's an awful lot to this map of the dhyanas. It can be quite detailed, but I'm going to sort of do a simplified version, really, this evening, because I want to concentrate a bit more on kind of tools, a number of tools or tips around deepening in meditation, deepening into absorption, rather than getting too tied up with this map. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the map, and then I'm going to give some sort of health warnings about use of such maps and how to use them wisely and in a kind way and not as a way of giving yourself a hard time. So that's coming next. Four dhyanas. The first one, particularly characterized by physical pleasure, and then and there's a word, a specific word for this that you may be familiar with, which is priti, or piti, slightly different, again, version in the Pali. Pleasurable energy in the body, which can manifest in quite a range of different ways. It might be more like an experience of sort of spaciousness or light, or it might be sort of rushing energy, and it might be quite subtle, or it might be really intense. There's a whole range. Also, sukha or joy, happiness, gets translated in different ways. You could say it's a kind of causeless joy or causeless happiness. It's not kind of fixed. It's not really attributable to anything in particular in your experience. It just kind of bubbles up together with the physical pleasure. And then, as there's a deepening through into the second dhyana, then the happiness comes more to the fore, and the pleasure is sort of more in the background, the physical pleasure. So this sukha, this happiness, joy, is more the predominant feature of that stage. And then as you go deeper into the third dhyana, there's the sukha sort of takes on has a different taste to it. So rather than being a sort of intense happiness or joy. It has a more peaceful quality to it. So that the sort of priti, the pleasurable energy in the body, sort of dies away, and you're left with the happiness, the sukha, but with a kind of calmer flavour to it. Really peaceful, real deep contentment, sense of beauty, deep contentment, subtle happiness. And then going deeper still, there's a dropping away of that happiness, and more just a kind of stillness, real deep, deep stillness, and equanimity, which is this just a state where you are fine with things just as they are. There's a freedom from the kind of push and pull, the usual mode that we're in, where we're not wanting that and we're wanting that, and that being pulled around. There's a dropping away of that, and a sort of an absence of the kind of pleasure or pain, and yet it's still really satisfying. So that normal kind of push and pull, there's a freedom from that. Actually, there's a little quote,
find it,
from Sangharakshita about this flavour, where actually, it's going to take me a while to dig that out. He's basically saying that it's quite curious in a way, because we normally think of happiness being bound up with pleasure. But actually, in that state, the pleasure is... there's a happiness which is sort of beyond pleasure, in a way. Pleasure as we normally experience it. And there's just a sort of deep satisfaction in the stillness. Yeah. A radiant stillness, that's how it's sometimes described. So... now I'm just going to say a little bit of the nature of a sort of health warning about such maps. We all have a tendency to have some kind of inner critic. And when you have something like this which has stages, which suggests a sort of being able to measure, then it's very easy for our sort of inner critic to latch onto that and to start negatively measuring our experience. So if at all possible, keep a lookout for that and don't do it. It's funny with meditation, because we don't really know what other people's experience is like, do we? So then in a way that inner critic has got rather a free rein to sort of imagine that our experience is somehow not as good as other people's. Or, you know, hear that so much. And really, the practice is for our benefit and our well-being and our freedom, and, you know, so we need to keep remembering that, to not use it in any way to give ourselves a hard time. And I think the other thing that's important to remember is that samadhi is not somehow the be-all or end-all of meditation, because meditation is deep and broad and has so many different aspects of it that are really important and really valuable. And they kind of overlap with samadhi, overlap with each other, but they're, in a way they're distinct. So some of those are just that with meditation we can become more aware of ourselves. We can get to know our tendencies. We find out more, what is it that makes me tick? What is it that makes me able to be happy, skillful? What is it that trips me up? What are my limitations in this life? You know, what are the independence on a number of conditions? So we just get to know ourselves better. And then there's the whole aspect of cultivating equanimity, of being able to bear our experience, whatever it is, being able to turn towards it. That's a kind of whole seam of practice that's really, really important. And then there's also the aspect of love, metta, compassion. Really, really important. That might be the primary thing for us in any one sit, in any one period of our practice. You know, that might be the main intention that we're steering by. And then there's also the whole aspect of investigating our experience and seeing how is it really, how are things really when we strip away our kind of our habits of thinking about things, our habits of putting things in certain boxes and assuming that they are a certain way. How are they really? So this is the whole insight, wisdom dimension of practice, of seeing things more clearly, seeing things more as they really are, and then suffering less as a result. So that's a whole theme of practice. And these things are very interrelated, but they're kind of, so they overlap, but they're also distinct. Yeah. And people have different tendencies and different strengths and different ways in. So, yeah, we need to just really support ourselves in our practice and not give ourselves a hard time, and not use any teaching to give ourselves a hard time. Yeah. Another aspect, another whole aspect, theme of practice is using the imagination. Using the imagination to connect with something bigger, with, we might call it the sacred, you know, something that's beyond our kind of illusion of being separate, being a separate self, something that's bigger than that. Connecting with the imagination, the faculty of the imagination to do that is a whole other dimension. It's really important and beautiful. Okay, so that was the health warning. And now I wanted to offer some tips and tools in relation to deepening in samadhi. Three of them, and we'll do some little exercises in relation to them. Also going to recap a little bit some of what's been covered in by Pragnyati in previous weeks. And then bring in these three things. So we've got allowing enjoyment, feedback loops, positive feedback loops, and the quality of sensitivity. So those are the three things. I'll just start by saying a little bit about some of what Pragnyati has been covering, which is so, you know, very much of a piece with this, how to deepen. So he talked about this whole aspect of allowing all of us, holding all of our experience in a kind and patient awareness, finding a way of bringing wise attention so that what we might see as kind of taking us away from the object of meditation, we can actually turn towards that. And sometimes when you turn towards what you think of as a distraction or a hindrance, whatever, it's actually that thing that takes you deeper. If you can turn towards it in the right way, let it be felt in the body, give it wise attention. Find a way to sort of get underneath it. So Pragnyati was talking about, you know, this process of sort of digging down and finding what's sort of underneath, what's the kind of driver of whatever's there on the surface that seems to be pulling you, pulling us around. What's the root or the driving force underneath it? Turning towards that. Not getting lost in the sort of the thoughts, the sort of surface of it, but finding it in the body on a deeper level. And Pragnyati also talked about this whole area of breadth and focus, and being able to not hold too tightly to a particular focus, but allow, have enough breath so that you can, so that you're not sort of pushing things out that need to be allowed, need to be given space. It's a whole thing he did give some input on. And having a sort of appropriate level of focus, which will be appropriate dependent on what's going on for for us in that particular moment. So enough focus not to drift, but not having the mind, having it too tight. So a level and kind of effort that is appropriate. Yeah, so this is some of what's been covered. So just thinking, it might just be because I'm speaking, but is it quite hot in here?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah?
Sure.
I'm wondering if we could have a... Thank you, Nick. Yeah, so going to come on to allowing enjoyment, and we'll do a little exercise around this. So it seems that it's quite common for people to have some level of resistance to enjoyment in meditation. And that might be more on the sort of level of a view that it's not okay, not really okay. Or it might be more sort of a gut emotional habit. It was really interesting one time on a retreat in a group with someone, she said that she'd realized that she had, as she put it, a great well of suppressed happiness. And I mean, we think of suppressing our, you know, painful experience, and we talk about, you know, not suppressing, not bypassing our painful experience, but we can also suppress and bypass our pleasurable experience, because it sort of doesn't fit our view of who we are or what's supposed to be happening. So she said she realised that she had this view that it was okay to enjoy yourself a bit, but not too much. And that was really a bit of a breakthrough for her to see that. So, and I found this in meditation, I found that, you know, some dropping down into sukha, and then this thought pops up, well, it's all very well for you having a nice time in the cushion, but what about, you know, shouldn't you be out there helping other people? And it was interesting to sort of see that view so clearly. And of course we do want to be out there helping other people. If we were only, our practice was only on the cushion, you know, but it's there should be, there's a flow, you know, we're practicing on the cushion in order to be a benefit, partly, to ourselves and others, to be a benefit, yeah. So, it's helpful to be, really be on the lookout for these attitudes. So I came up with a little exercise that we could do to try to sort of get underneath our attitudes. And maybe not everyone has that resistance. But I thought it'd be interesting to have a look and see, can find what is our attitude to the possibility or the experience of deep enjoyment in meditation. How do we feel about that? So, I have a question. The question is, what would it be like to experience deep enjoyment in meditation? Or maybe we have that experience and it's more, what is it like? So just find the one that's right for you. I thought we could do this as a one-to-one exercise. So the way that would look is that you pair up with somebody and you say to them this question, what would it be like to experience deep enjoyment in meditation? And then they say something. It could just be one thing. Yeah, just one thing. And then they ask the question back to you. What would it be like to experience deep enjoyment in meditation? So we'll just try that for about 5 minutes. So I suggest, just pair up with somebody. Just allow a pairing up to happen without worrying about it.
So we repeatedly ask the question.
Yes, you do. Yeah, thanks, yeah. You ask it, and allowing plenty of space, you know.
Okay.
So you go back and forth. Is everybody clear about the logistics of that?
Yeah. What's the second option of question?
What is it like? So what is it like? But really, you know, whatever your partner, however your partner frames it, just hear it as it's right for you. What would it be like, or what is it like to experience deep enjoyment in meditation? Okay. And I'll ring the bell after 5 minutes to signal the end. Back to our places, because we're going to do a bit of individual practice next. In terms of these attitudes to enjoyment, it's worth mentioning that the Buddha was very encouraging of cultivating absorption, cultivating pleasurable states of meditation. So I find that's helpful to remember. I think one kind of attitude that we might spot, that I've certainly seen people, is a kind of no pain, no gain. And I came across that, actually, interestingly, when I was teaching in the prison up the road last week. So we were talking about posture and about how it's really good to be comfortable. And someone was blatantly not comfortable, and I was sort of saying, are you really, you know, is that okay? And he said, well, I sort of find that it's good to be a bit uncomfortable because it keeps you focused. And I thought that was a classic wrong view, in a way, that you know, that there has to be discomfort somehow to get to, you know, to earn merit or something. So yeah. Anybody uncover anything interesting about their attitude to enjoyment?
A thought did occur to me, which I mentioned, which was that, for me anyway, I think maybe that you can miss the pleasurable aspect of meditation because we expect, or I expect perhaps, that our pleasurable experiences are much less subtle there when you know, maybe watching a movie or eating something, or sex, or going on a roller coaster. It's something a bit more in your face.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what you come to expect enjoyment to be.
Yeah.
Whereas the enjoyment of meditation is there, but much subtler, I think.
So. Yeah. I've heard the fourth dhyana, the pleasure of the fourth dhyana, described as an acquired taste, because it's just so not what we usually look for happiness, and yet it's deeply satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're not used to that subtlety. We have to, it's a process of getting used to that. Anybody else like to say anything? Especially if,
I was quite surprised at the idea of expecting enjoyment from meditation. Mm. So that was quite significant. Just really surprised. I thought I never thought to look for enjoyment in meditation. So that's quite pleasing.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't part of your unconscious map of what to expect or allow.
I can find pleasurable experiences overwhelming.
In meditation?
In meditation.
Mm.
So there's something that maybe I just don't want them.
Don't
want it because it can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
So it might be doing something to dampen it or not actually go with it.
Yeah. So you've experienced that. There's a block.
Yeah.
And I mean that could come from different things, couldn't it? It could be a view or more. Or there can be a kind of all sorts of things. You know, there can be that kind of view, the kind of views we've talked about. Or there can be sort of like a fear of a loss of controls that can also come up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, an experience of preeti, say, can be very, very strong, you know, and a bit, sometimes that does bring up that feeling of overwhelm, yeah. It's possible to kind of look, if you're experiencing that very strong energy in the body, it is possible to sort of deliberately go for the more subtle, because it does all calm down. Apparently, it's what's going on when you've got the preeti and sukha is actually that there's body opioids, natural kind of body chemicals.
Opioids,
I think opioids is the right word. And after a while, they run out. So that's part of, I mean, that might sound like a very sort of materialist take, but apparently on a chemical level, that is what's happening. But you can also, apparently part of what happens is that when you deepen, your breathing gets much more subtle. And from that, there's a kind of build-up of carbon dioxide, actually. And that's part of the whole chemical thing that happens. And you can kind of change that by taking a deep breath. If you're feeling overwhelmed by the preeti, you can take a deep breath and then things will calm down. It might take you more into the... Or sometimes you can deliberately lean more into the sukha. Sometimes just a, you know, just even a suggestion of that to the mind, you know, just the word sukha or joy or happiness or can sort of... So those are all ways you can work with it if it feels a bit overwhelmed. Okay, let's have a little sit and a little bit of reflection around this, a little bit more around this actually, looking at the time, I think we should go on to the next bit. Sorry. But we will do some, very soon we will do a sit. We will do meditative exercise, yeah. But it's something I really encourage you to sort of keep looking out for it, for these attitudes that are undermining, you know. Yeah, I can tell you what I was going to do and you could do it in your own time. So just reflect, you know, get into a place of stillness and reflect. Just drop in the thought consciously, it's okay to enjoy myself a lot. And to see, you know, see what comes up. See what comes up. Okay. So let's do a bit on positive feedback loops. I'm still really roasting hot, actually. Anybody else? Is it just me?
It's very warm.
It is really warm. Nick, could we open those ones as well? So, feedback loops. Okay, I've got them here, but they're... Okay, positive feedback loop. So when we do get absorbed in meditation, what's happening is that a positive loop or virtuous cycle has got established. Basically. So we're really with our present moment experience. We're really present, we're really sensitive and attuned to what's happening in our experience. And then when we do that, there's going to be more pleasure. So the more we're really opening to experience, really present with it, the more there's going to be pleasure. Example, with the breath. There is a kind of natural, it's going to be naturally pleasurable. If we're really with it. So, from attention and presence naturally arises calm and pleasure. And then when there's pleasurable experience like that, it's very natural to be interested. We're naturally engaged with our experience, and out of interest, there's a natural being present. Whereas the opposite, negative feedback loop, you're not really present. So, because you're not really present with it, the breath is boring or not particularly pleasant. And because it's boring and not particularly pleasant, then we get distracted. So that's the opposite. So, does that make sense? Is that clear? Any questions about that? Okay, so then it's a question of how do you kind of break into that virtuous cycle, that positive loop? And you can sort of break in at any point, really. You know, often we focus on, okay, I'm going to really pay attention, I'm going to keep on paying attention, I'm going to keep on bringing the attention back. And then eventually, you know, if you're really diligent with that, if you really are diligent with that and do it in the right way, you will get, you know, you will find that you settle in the breath, for example, starts to, sensations in the body, whatever your focus is, it will become more pleasurable. But another way in is to sort of break into it here and to look for whatever pleasure is or calm is already there in experience. So in any moment, there's this constant flow of experience, isn't there? And in any moment, there's you know, sensations, experiences, thoughts. Some of it's pleasant, some of it's unpleasant. You can sort of lean more into the pleasant. Lean more towards the pleasant. Identify what's already pleasant. You sort of have your antennae tuned to the pleasant. So for example, with the breath, you might look for the pleasant, or you might more specifically look for calm. And we'll do this, we'll try this. So looking for the flavour of calm in the breath, in the body, deliberately tuning to that and then really staying with that. So let's do a bit of this. Yeah. So you'd like to set yourself up meditation. You're just taking a bit of time to settle, connect with body, ground, trusting our intuitive sense of what we need in this moment to let go a little. Seeing how much it's possible to soften in the body, the hands, and the face, belly. Maybe tuning into the support, this solid ground under us, and Sangha around us. And tuning in with our breathing. Aware of this body breathing in. Breathing out. Really tuning in to any quality of calm. In our experience. Any quality of calm in the breath. Just be really subtle. anything that feels calm or calming in our experience. Really tasting that, letting it be felt. What's that like? And tuning in now to anything pleasant in our bodily experience. Be the breath, might be a particular area of the body. Might be just very subtly pleasant. We're not worried about the duration of sensations or exactly where they are. Just tuned to the pleasant, to the pleasurableness. Really tasting that and allowing it space, however subtle. a tea break now, and I invite you to share with somebody over the tea break how you found that. And then we'll come back and have a longer sit, and I'll bring in this quality of sensitivity.